Welcome to episode 300, which is a Bolo interview. We spoke about this earlier in the year, that on the podcast we will start doing interviews, and they're called Bolo. Today we have a very nice surprise for you. Fidel Gonzalez and his art on episode 300. You know, our podcasts are all about guns, firearms, self-protection. If you're interested in any self-protection in the Tampa Bay area, give us a call at Raider Cop Tac. That's TAC.com. Raider Cop Tac, TAC.com. And we do all kinds of evolutions of firearms, pistol, shotgun, carbine, rifle, you name it. Whatever you're looking for, we can help you in that program. You know, there's a lot of people out there that are buying guns left and right. And God bless them, because I've always said that the Democratic Party is one of the number one gun dealers in America. But it's not only buying a gun. There's a lot of other things that have to happen also. And one of those things is training. Make sure you train with that weapon. It's very important. Make sure that you have insurance, like the USCCA, to insure you, because God forbid you got to take that weapon out and point it at somebody, and something goes wrong, or something might not go wrong, but you still might get sued by the lawyers. So USCCA, look them up as well. Sign up today. And or you can give us a call if you have any questions at area code 813-942-7400, 813-942-7400. You know it and I know it. There's nothing but chaos all around us. Everywhere we look, the Biden administration continues to step on doo-doo as they now tell us how they save Israel from a sure attack and destruction from Iran. But never you mind that the clown at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is the one that created the entire scenario since the first day he walked into the White House as the 46th president. That's right, folks. Chaos. Remember the show Get Smart and Chaos? Yeah, well, chaos is in the White House and creating just that, chaos. Everywhere you look, we as Americans are being told that we should be ready, have a plan. Make sure that your family knows that plan. Self-protection is a must, because we don't know what tomorrow brings. It's important that you and your family create a plan of survival, and you practice it, and you know it's effective. Because without you, we have nothing. Remember, that's our slogan here. So I'm going to cut it short on the intro, because everybody knows that the circus is at the White House at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And to repeat it over and over at this point is just useless. So we're going to open up our Bibles, and we're going to go to the book of James, chapter 1, verse 19, and it states, "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath." It doesn't get any more profound than that. Listening is a technique that is lost in America. People want to talk over you. Sometimes you haven't even finished saying what you're saying. They already have it, the script written in their heads, ready to talk over you. And being swift to hear is so important. Lord also says, slow to speak. In other words, think before you move your lips. And slow wrath. Don't get upset on any little thing. As always, I continue to apologize for me sounding like Elmer Fudd. I told you March 1st I had surgery and implants and stuff like that. So still working out a couple of the S's and T's and stuff like that. But thank you for having the patience. All right. We're lined up for episode 300 with Fidel Gonzalez, guy that I've known for about 34 years now. And I met him in the state that he's going to talk about. He was a phenomenal person, hard worker, and a go-getter. Somebody that just didn't settle for being in one position. He always excelled and exceedingly trying to get higher and higher. Considering he wasn't from this country, considering that he had to learn the language, and considering that today he's a proud American, and I'm proud to call him my friend. So, it's time to bring in the short bus and the main event, episode 300, Bolo interview with Fidel Gonzalez, episode 300. And here we have Fidel Gonzalez. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you for having me in your podcast.
It is an honor to have you here. And we have known each other since 1989. So that, what is it, like 34 years or something like that?
Yes. Yeah.
So probably you and I, when we first met, we didn't have gray hair. No. On the beard, oh, on the beard.
Actually, I have hair.
Okay, that's another trick. You had hair, and I didn't have it on the beard. So,
yeah.
But I was eager to have you on because of the incredible work you do. Not only recently, I can go back to the mid-90s, and I'll tell that story a little bit. But I don't want to get ahead of myself, and I want to put the cart before the horse. Introduce yourself to the audience. Who is Fidel Gonzalez?
Hi, my name is Fidel Gonzalez. I'm a Cuban refugee. I came to this country in 1980 in a wheelchair. I am in a wheelchair because I had an accident back in Cuba when I was 15 years old. So when Mariel lift opens and President Carter invited us to come here to the United States. My uncle, who lived in Miami at the time, went to the port of Mariel, and hey, here I am.
Right.
I came here with my mom, my sisters, and my brother-in-law, and my sister and brother-in-law, two sisters and two brother-in-law, they went their separate way. I stayed with my mom. Kind of always wanted to be with my mom because when I was down, because of my accident, she was there.
Yep.
Actually, she still support me.
Yeah.
In moral support, in a sense, and she's always worried about me. So my mom stopped working, and you know, I had to find a way to repay her because I don't know. I'm a classical old timer with my mind is set up and how I grew up. You know, a man is the one who takes care of the woman, not the other way around.
Correct.
So I started looking for a place so I can generate some income, so my mom stopped working. So I tried some old, you know, jobs, different type of jobs. I was a cashier, a hostess, and I was not making good on that. So I decided to go to a technical school where I was working, and I became a computer programmer in 8 months. So now I had some experience with jobs where they can let you go in a flash.
Right.
Because, you know, they hire a better person who walks on more able. So I say, I need something more stable. So the HR building for the county at the time was 140 West Flagler. And I used to go there every single Friday to apply. The guy even knew me.
Wow.
After 3 months. It took me a year before I was set up to an interview for the Department of Correction. This is in 1987. I said, we have a position for somebody bilingual. And he's answering the phone information, giving the people who get arrested, the family members, the information about the bond amount and stuff like that. So I say, yeah, I take it. And that's how I got my foot on the door in the Department of Correction. After that, you know, I went, keep doing my other thing. I used to help a friend doing videos of the wedding and then editing the video. I had an old computer for video editing. It was an Amiga computer. I don't know if you heard about Commodore Amiga.
Commodore, yeah.
And the video platform they used to edit video was called the Video Toaster.
Wow.
So I started training on that with my friend and stuff like that, doing video. I was working corrections. And one time, a position opened up within correction. They pay better salary. So that's how I moved to pretrial services. And pretrial services was there until I retired back in 2018. You know, correction became too political. And I had it with that.
Right.
You know, you can tell who was who.
Yes.
So basically, during correction, I say, I'm going to get a degree. I'm going to go to the university and get a degree. And that was in the beginning, in the mid-90s. So I applied I went and did my application to go to Miami-Dade College. And while I was going to Miami-Dade College, the access department noticed my videos. And they say, we need somebody like you to do some videos. And I say, yeah, I'm here. They hire me. And I did corrections and Miami-Dade College. A correction for 32 years and Miami-Dade College for 15 years.
That's a lot.
So I, you know, my art, I graduated from, actually belongs to the University of Florida, but it is New World School of the Art, which is in downtown Miami. Over there, I had a degree on electronic intermediate, which means photograph, video, art installations.
Let me ask you this question. Now, you started in like 87 doing computers, and that's the beginning of computers.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
There was a little bit of risk for you in that. That could have taken off or it could not have. But now, as you're going into videoing, this is something a little bit more, I'm assuming, more stable for you?
Oh, yes. The thing is, I can program. I can still program SQL because I'm a person that when I find something that I like and I learn the basics, I try to grow on my knowledge. And, you know, I use, read about it, do the changes, different language that came along. Back then when I started computer, it was COBOL, Pascal, RPG2, basics. Those four languages. And now they have C++, SQL to do queries, Python to do the Raspberry Pi and the Arduino board to do robotic stuff. I have the knowledge. I can read the code. I know what to do. I'm not into robotic or anything because my thing is more about life, which is photography and videos and painting. I'm going to explain to you painting. When I was in New World School of the Art, we all have to learn about colors. And so we did paintings. We didn't do paintings like, Raphael, Michelangelo, and stuff like that. But it was more like conceptual paintings, you know, mixing the colors and creating abstract art and, you know, modern art and stuff like that. And I remember there was a class about that, Open Your Creativity. And there was an installation about what you do every day, you know. So some people, some students, the installation, they shower in the classroom. Yeah, because, hey, that's the way, that's what I do every day, you know, brush the trees. So my teacher said, you took classes, you draw well, you paint well, you photographer well, but I want you to do something different. I don't want you, nothing to do about, you know, real art, something conceptual. Say, okay, I got it. I can tell you what I'm going to do every day. So I was prepared for the show. I put a basket. Inside the basket, I put one of those Italian tabletop, red and white square tabletop. And I had a little storage for my food. And I put a glass, I put water. I took a raw steak out of the storage, I put it on my plate, and I started eating it, a raw steak full of blood. And guess what? All those vegetarian kids in the class start puking. My teacher said, man, you got an eye here. Yeah, move on.
I'm sure we weren't expecting this.
No. So, exactly. So I started working in pre-trial, but my creative part was more like in Miami-Dade College, you know. And I did a couple of jobs for back then when computer was not like nothing like it is now.
Correct.
Nothing. I mean, today kids have, computer, everything, every program has artificial intelligence built in. And stuff like that. Now, back then, yeah, it was your eyes and, you know, your creativity and how to solve problems, basically. So I did a couple of photo to paint back then, and they came out all right. I can tell you, I can do some photo painting right now, and you know, with artificial intelligence, I can improve on it.
Yeah,
it's not the artificial intelligence is going to do it itself, and that's it. No. You have to improve on it. You know,
right?
There's something that computer will never do, like a person.
Yeah, you can. Artificial intelligence could be used for good or for bad. Hopefully, it's for good.
I totally agree, you know. So the next level of creativity is not letting the computer create it. And that's one thing that I don't like about people doing it. It's just they let the computer create it and they claim it is theirs. And it's not. It's really not, you know. You can create the basic on it and build on it, and it's yours. But, you know, actually, and that's how I use nowadays artificial intelligence, just to improve on my idea, to create like a base. And then I start adding up all the elements that it needs. So that basically is... my life until I retired from corrections in Miami-Dade College.
Now, I want to add, it was probably sometime in the mid-90s, there was an employee that worked with us. I'm not going to mention her whole name, but her name was Elise, her first name. And you restored a photograph for her that was her parents, I believe. And then you brought it to work, and she was so emotional because, I mean, she must have had this photo for so many years in the poor condition it was in, and you restored it. And she had me, oh, can you put this away in the locker? Because I want to show, you know, the rest of my coworkers that may have not been there that day. And you really brought... a sense of joy back to her life on that photograph. There's where I first found out that this was another one of your talents. I knew you since 89. I knew you did a lot of computer programming, which was a new thing back then in the late 80s. But you would always be sitting back there in the computer. But I didn't know about that. How did you get involved in that?
Okay, basically, that was my talent when I was hired by correction. I was going to go into video production way before corrections.
Yeah.
That was one of my side jobs that I did with my friend while I was working on it. And I liked it. So I my first... photography camera I had when I was 11 years old. It was a Russian camera called Zenith.
Okay.
Zenith. No, now Zenith is the American brand. Zenith. With a Z. It was a Russian camera, film camera. And that was my first experimentation with photography. But basically... art was the first thing on my taste. I didn't choose correction. Correction chose me.
There you go.
You know, I was willing to work in anything. I was not picky. I said, no, I need to climb out of the monotony that I was living, you know, living paycheck by paycheck. And, you know, I was my mom. One thing is, I saw the changes of my mom when I had my accident when I was 15 years old. I mean, that hit her so hard, and I felt her pain. I said, no. My mom needs to chill out. My mom needs to get a break from this suffering.
Yeah.
So I dedicated all my life to take care of my mom. My mom is still alive. She lives upstairs from me.
Thank God.
I own this duplex. My mom is 93 years old.
God bless her.
And she's in great shape. And I will be with her until the end. I'm married. I have a family. Married back in 1993. So, I always kept my mom close to me just in case. Just it's something that is in my heart.
Right.
I need to take care of her because what she did for me, and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So art was part of my life all the time. I work in corrections. When I was working in pretrial services, there was this man that I'm grateful because I learned so much from him. His name was Samuel Orms. Sam. He was very, wow. I don't know how to describe how to call him.
Right.
But it was not.
He was a character.
Normal.
he was a character.
Oh, he was a character. So, but I learned all the basics about photography with him. He taught me something that in the future when I went to college, I already knew the basics of photography. So when the teacher started calling things, I knew what she was talking about. So I breezed through college because of that.
Yeah.
Life experience, guys, life experience is a lot better than what you teach in college. In college, you get a certificate or a diploma saying, hey, this person went and did this in college. But if you experiment yourself, you learn a lot more than what you learn in college. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
So let me not you know, deviate from that interview.
Right.
But correction showed me to start. And I had my background in programming, so I reinvent myself. And when I was working in correction, like I say, I met this man, Sam Orms, and he had the first and only closed-circuit TV station in a jail.
Correct.
That's it. Nobody else in the world has it.
Correct.
Or had it. And there was different shows. There was a Bible show. There was the Public Defender Life. Mm-hmm. And you know, just him talking about sports and boxing.
Yeah.
And, you know, he may call the studio and, you know, answer, put him on home. You know, we kind of screened the email before because some of them, they wanted to say something stupid in the air.
Right.
So we had a rule not to discuss anything internal, like riots and stuff like that, or suicides and stuff like that. But some inmate called the studio and they leave voicemails saying about what they're feeling, they want to kill themselves and stuff like that. Across from ICTV was a health service, so it was run by a man, Arthur, what's his name?
Arthur. Tyrone Williams, wasn't it? Or was it Arthur Brown?
Arthur Brown.
Arthur Brown.
And Arthur Brown, we passed a message to them. Is look, this guy is calling from C-Cell 5C something, and he wanted to have a problem killing himself. But right away, they tried to transfer him to the ninth floor, which is health. They do his health screening there. And, you know, I believe that ICTV saved lives sometimes, even though Sam had a little problem. He passed away back in 2019. He was old, and he fell. He broke his, I think, the hip,
mm-hmm.
and he never recovered from that. He died, passed away. So, it, you know, it was sad. But when Sam was there, he, you know, I believe he saved lives, you know. So I learned how to do show live, and I was able to screen the calls, and I was, I had a lot of fun, believe it or not, when I was working in pretrial services. I met a lot of friends. I met a lot of people, friends that were really, really lazy. Just, they came in, they sat, they didn't do anything, but they were funny, and so
good enough for government work.
Yeah, so back in Cuba, we will have a word for that. The people who try to hide from work, it's called un guillao. So we have some guillao there.
Plenty of them.
So
now
let me put a little bit more picture
to Sam Orms. Sam, like you said, was way ahead of his time.
Yeah.
And he was the first ICTV, that's what it was called, television show inside a jail or prison. It was primarily for rehabilitational purposes, but he had it like a show. Like when he did sports, remember the chicken? He'd come out with the little chicken and boxing and all this other stuff. And he had his wardrobe on, the lab coat and all that other stuff. And as unfortunate as it sounds, a lot of these inmates that were coming to jail over and over and over again, they would wait for 4 o'clock to see ICTV.
Yeah, and some of these inmates became trustee and they worked in ICTV.
And they worked there, correct. And they were learning a trade. And Sam was more of an educator than anything else. He used that television program to get the word out. And unfortunately, Sam, in my opinion, was way beyond his time, that the department never understood what Sam was doing. Even though he did it for many years and they kind of left him alone, they didn't understand how powerful what he was doing. And today they don't have it. No. Today they don't have it.
You know, that, and that's what I said at the beginning of the podcast, is correction became too political.
Correct.
And it was about themselves, not the inmate. Even though they were crooks, man, they, you know, some of them, they were really bad. But some of them, they were there because they made mistakes.
Right.
But it was more about administrators.
Now, tell us, you know, you've taken us through the computer age to camera age. You're coming from Cuba, learning some of those trades in camera with Sam Orms. And what, now you've transitioned out of working for the government, you're working on your own. What are some of the projects that you're currently doing?
Oh, I do some digital painting. Basically, it's digital painting. I have, I think I can sit here and show it to you. It's called a tablet, and you use this pen to paint on it. You see how the mouse is moving?
Oh, yeah.
So you get an art program, like Photoshop, Revell, that's what I use, and also one called Painters. And you can actually get a picture and do like a transparency on top, and you start painting on the transparency with digital paint, which you do like the effect of acrylic or oil, and then I print it on canvas, and I retouch the canvas with real gel, so it looks like a painting. You look at it, it's like painting.
It's amazing.
And it's amazing. Back then it was different. Back then you have to Frame very light the photography and get actually real pain and start going, taking your time. And now it takes me a couple of days to finish one. Before, it took me like a week or more.
Yeah.
And that's basically that. So since I was knowledgeable with computers and computer logic, and I had some artistic talents, I was mixing the two. And this is the age now of computer and computer art. And you mix it, and what you get is some incredible stuff. So when I retire, more was like photography before. But when I really retired, I move on to video. I was editing wedding before and stuff like that. It was kind of boring. I say, no, the cameras nowadays have tremendous quality. So I use a program called DaVinci Resolve to edit all my footage. And I say, yeah, let me put it in the internet to see, you know, on YouTube, to see what I get. And hey, I've seen so many views, people subscribing to my channel, and hey, I don't know. I also, since I was into computer before, I understand how a CNC work. I do some woodwork, and actually, can you hold on a minute? I'm going to show you something that I did.
Of course.
Hold on. I think I have it here. Oh, there it is. I see it from here. This.
That's wood?
That's wood. Wow. And it's in layers.
Yeah.
And I cut that with my laser. And I do this Excellent. Little thing.
Look at that.
I have a Jewish...
The detail.
I have a Jewish friend, and I created this. It has something to...
The Star of David, yeah. Look at the detail on it. Yeah.
So I do laser engraving. I create the art, and then I digitize the art and transfer it to a laser or a CNC. And I do it there. So I'm still doing the paintings too. I'm not in a hurry. I'm retired, bro.
Right.
But
so you got time.
If somebody wants to buy something from me, and basically to my friend, I don't charge him. I, you know, just give him away to my friend. Why? You know. It's like a family, you know. I've known you for 30 years.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
How can I charge somebody I know for so long in something that it takes me, you know, I can grab any picture in 3 or 4 hours, I can make it into a painting. Why I want to charge a friend of mine who I know was there for me in good times, in bad times, especially a correctional officer who worked with me, that protect me in case of any, you know, bad behavior from inmates. You know,
right.
If some guy go nuts, like I seen before, down when I was interviewing the real lobby, or when they transferred to the second floor to be classified. You work classification for a long time. That's where I know you from. You know, it's, you know, I feel... For example, the other day I was in Facebook and I saw Sergeant Page posted a picture of his wife, late wife, on his wedding picture.
Yeah.
You know, but the picture was so bad. It looked horrible. And I said, no, I got to do something here. So I grabbed the picture. I clean it up, and I send it back to him. Say, this is better, just in case he wants to print it and have a better one.
it means a lot to him.
Yeah, and also I did the same thing with Officer Farina. You know, he posted a picture of his wedding. It looked crappy, you know. So I fixed it and color balanced it and sent it back to him, you know. I'm not going to charge these guys. I knew these guys for so many years. This is like my family. So
yeah, I know you. You did one of myself and my granddaughter that I'm raising, and you also did one of me and my old partner Negron.
Yeah,
and
you know,
it was very nice.
The one with Negron was not that bad. It needed to be a little sharper and color balance and stuff like that. You know, I remember one, I don't know if you remember. One day, I had a Camaro, a red Camaro. And I was on 27th Avenue, passing 36th Street. I was going to 112 that way. And hey, I don't know if I have my car stop or a flat tire or something. And you and Negron stop and help me. I don't know if you remember that. Negron was awesome.
I can barely remember what I had for lunch. But right, we were the dynamic duo. We were always together.
Yeah, and you know, hey, I remember that. Another time in correction that hit me really hard is when Officer Trudeau passed away. You know, everybody in correction had like a sidekick or a partner. It was Trudeau and Marrero, Officer Marrero.
Right. AKA Baby.
Yeah, Hero. No, actually, I think that Marrero became like a Mickey Mouse cat in Disney.
I think he did.
It became a Mickey Mouse cat. I remember those two also, but Trudeau, man. Trudeau used to hang around with me. I took Trudeau one day to Club Mystique in the Hilton by the airport. You know, Latin night, Cuban, you know, salsa. And Trudeau had a blast. I mean, I can tell you that. I remember that. It was like,
He was a good guy. We lost him in an accident. And it took the department by surprise. Yeah. He stopped to help somebody.
That's who he was.
And he got crushed by a car, and it really hurt a lot of people. Because he was an awesome guy.
Yeah, he was.
And his brother George just passed away.
Oh, he did. When George passed away?
I want to say a year ago or something. About a year ago.
Know. Yeah, he was great, too. He was always in court service and stuff like that.
Yeah, but he was an impact when he died. He had a whole career ahead of him, and he was taken from a lot of people because Trudeau was everybody's friend.
He was.
You know, so you saying that's that person you bond with? I know you bonded with him most likely in information.
He was his old office. He was. I mean, and he was my protector there. Because I'm sorry to tell, but there was a female officer, the Corporal Sewin. She was not good to me, man. Even though she was Cuban, she was married to an Indian guy, I think. That's why she got the last name Sewin. She was not good to me, man. She was like very tense all the time. And pulling me to the edge. It was Trudeau who say, hey, man, Corporal, you need to back off a little bit.
He was a breath of fresh air. in an environment that was very tense, Trudeau was that calming person. He was always like that. Yeah, I mean, I would, he'd come in at 11 o'clock. I would be leaving, and sometimes we'd have coffee to bring up, you know, with Moreno.
Right.
They would do coffee. And never upset, no anxiety, nothing. In an environment that's full of anxiety, problems, he was always calm. And it was taken from us all of a sudden. So that's working in that type of setting is not easy. It's not easy. And you did it. I did it. And, you know, we're better off today because we worked there, because we're level-headed.
Absolutely. We seen the what bad people can do. Jeez, a lot of people out there don't know. Well, nowadays they know a little more because of social media. But back then there was no social media, and you get to cases of parent raping their kids. I interview a case like that, and it just blew my mind. It stayed with me for a while.
It's trouble.
People who you interview in classified downstairs in booking, and next to know the alarm goes off, the guy hangs himself. And you see that, I say, man, I couldn't tell if the guy was going to do that. So you feel some guilt for not helping. Right. But hey, you know, you learn a lot. You learn a lot. And that's something you see that stays with you for the rest of your life. But you grow, man. You become stronger. You avoid fights, even though I can hold my own on a fight. But you are more disciplined in engaging with right. people, you know. People flip you out on the street because you cut them off and stuff like that. Say, hey, it's fine. You know, hey, go ahead. I'm not in a hurry. You go ahead. You go in front of me.
Another thing is, back then, we dealt with sheer numbers that don't exist today. An example of that. We used to have, back in 89, 90, 125,000 bookings.
Yeah.
Today, if you have 48, right. It's 48,000. You know, you had them jammed inside cells like sardines. You know, it was a different era. It was rough. It was tough. Today, it's polished. That's probably why it's more political.
Right. Exactly. It's too political. For example, there's a state law here called lottery and prowling, and they don't enforce it anymore. Yeah. You know, right. A group of men drinking beer in a corner street, you know, they selling drugs and stuff like that. And they don't enforce the law. They don't.
Yeah.
You call the police and say, look, you know, I think there's something suspicious going on. Police doesn't jail.
Yeah.
And I don't blame the police, you know. I don't blame the police because they told not to do it. But, hey.
Right. It's a system. It is. It's a system.
You know, one thing that I applaud the government and people say, you're an asshole because you're senseless. I see bums sleeping on the sidewalk. And it's the same one, homeless. And as the government signed a law that is starting October 1st, those people cannot sleep on the street, or they cannot put camps in the sidewalk and stuff like that. I applaud that law. I got friends who say, you're a son of a bitch, man. No, these people are not homeless. They're homeless by choice because they use all the drugs and stuff like that. They don't want no responsibility. And they block in the sidewalk, man. All people with the carrying the rolling car with the groceries, Can I pass by? Because sometimes they'll pee on the in themselves, sleeping on the sidewalk. No, those people need to go to either a rehabilitation place or a mental hospital. They don't belong in the street.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
So
it is the depravity of our society. Unfortunately, they've become victims that they don't want to leave being homeless. It's crazy. So today they have Camilla's house. It looks like a hotel, but they can't stay there. They throw them out in the morning. You know, you got to go work, but they don't work. They don't do anything.
No, they don't. They don't,
because they've become their own victim.
They don't want to engage in. No, so you want to be homeless? Okay, you move to a place, you sleep in a tent in the middle of the field somewhere, but not blocking the street. No,
right.
Sorry,
right. And some of them are able bodies; they can work if they wanted to. Right, they can work if they want. Some are mentally ill. There's no way for them to go, and they wander around.
You know.
But the able bodies.
You make me remember one day I was in the walk interviewing somebody about pretrial. This guy must have been 6'5". He looked like Shaq O'Neal. Big, strong. And the part I interviewed him and said, do you have a job? He said, no, I don't have a job. I'm disabled. He said, what's your disability? You know, I needed to ask, because this guy can, you know, I can give him a job, carry me everywhere. You know?
You're right.
He said, what's your disability? Emotional. Oh, okay. You know, it's just ridiculous. This guy didn't want to work.
Wei Wong.
No.
What's the disability?
Emotional disability. Hey, whatever.
Right. Not that it doesn't exist,
no.
But he didn't appear to have it.
Yeah, exactly.
He was gearing up so when he goes to court, he could tell the judge his tearful disability. Can the audience find you anywhere on social media?
Yeah, they can find me on Facebook. My Facebook page is Fidel Gonzalez. My face is there, you know, with a big mustache and stuff like that. I have a YouTube channel. It's called Rolling Raul, one word. And that's where I post my videos. I basically post video there. I'm going to start doing videos on how I do the painting process. You know,
Excellent. Every
step I take, all the paint I use, all the digital brushes I use, and I'm going to do a speedy demo of a painting. And I, you know, just little clips here and there. I'm disabled. I'm in a wheelchair, but that's not an excuse to not go and explore the world or explore everything. I have in mind having a project to do all the national parks in the United States. I'm doing now state parks here. I did one that is Cape Florida. You know, I'm testing my video editing and storytelling. I'm not fully yet to do a series of it, but I have plan, and that's one of my plans. One of my plans is visit all the state parks in Florida, and then move on to national parks, starting with the one in Florida, like the Everglades, and moving on to maybe Utah, the Wyoming, you know.
Sky's the limit.
Exactly.
Have you thought about doing an Instagram page?
I do have an Instagram page, but to tell you the truth, I never put attention to it, to posting there.
I know it would be a little tricky with the paintings because you would need like permission from the people. Can I post this?
Right.
Because it's their property, exactly. In essence. But it would be good. But what I do want to tell you is I want to have you back in the near future. So we can do an update on what you got going on YouTube.
Okay. I totally agree, man. I'm happy to see you, man. I haven't seen you since 2016, I think, was the last time I saw you.
Something. That's when I retired.
Wow. Yeah.
I didn't walk out of there. I ran out of there.
Yeah. You know, I keep in touch with Officer Mahi from House Arrest.
Great guy. Great guy. He did 30-something years.
I keep in touch with him. Funny, because last year I did a transatlantic cruise from London all the way to Miami. That had different stops, like in Spain and Portugal. And hey, guess who was in the group? Officer Mahi.
Look at there. So, didn't he move to Naples?
Yeah, he's living in North Naples. He used to live here by Aventura, and he moved over there. He bought a house. It's like I think it's 3/4 acres or 1.5 acres, something like that. And he has some chickens there. So when he comes to Miami to see his dad, he brings me, eggs. And all those eggs from those chickens, they come in different colors. Some are brown, some are blue, some are green. That's crazy.
Easter eggs.
So
Easter eggs. He's a great guy, though. He's
definitely
a great guy.
So I am happy to be in your podcast, and I hope, we can do another one.
We will do another one. We'll keep the audience up.
Since you know a lot about guns and stuff like that, ever since they passed that law, they don't need a concealed carry permit. I always carry one with me. But
you have the right to do so.
So, but I would like to know. And maybe I can watch one of your podcasts. The procedure, not to pull out the gun. Only when you in life.
Immediate threat to your life or someone else's.
That's what I thought. I would never pull a gun on anybody unless my life is feel threatened. So,
and another thing, if I can add, if you're carrying a gun, avoid problems, because you might have two people fighting, and then you introduce the gun to the fight.
Exactly.
So you want to stay away from
that. No.
Stay away from there.
I'm pretty cool, man. I don't get in argument with people. I just walk away.
Right. But I'm not referring directly to you, but people, because they're carrying, they think they become the police now. Hey, break it up. And you could be printing, which means they could kind of tell you're wearing a gun. Next thing you know, you brought the gun to the fight.
That's correct.
And, people can get hurt.
And
so
my theory is,
carrying a weapon is a big responsibility.
My theory is, if you're going to pull a gun, is to use it. Otherwise, keep it locked up and away. Right.
And if you're going to use it, use it well.
Exactly.
Use it well. Don't hesitate. Once you've decided, I have to do this, use it well.
Not to tell somebody, no, stop doing that. No. If your life, somebody comes to you.
And here is your secret right here, my friend, your wrist. Make sure your wrist doesn't bend. Right? So you keep your wrist nice and steady. So when the gun goes off, your wrist does not move.
That's correct.
You don't want to do this. You want to keep that wrist pointed forward. So when it shoots like this. Why? Because that way the gun won't jam.
I don't know if you remember Officer Rodriguez, Rosa.
Yeah. No. She committed suicide. Yeah.
I went to the shooting range with her back in the 90s. And I remember she bought a 44 Magnum. And she thought she was Dirty Harry. And put that gun. And that gun, she was not holding it, you know, straight up. That gun went back.
Knocked out a tooth, right? Yeah. I heard the story.
I was there. I was there.
Yeah.
I was there with Officer Santana.
Yeah. I remember Santana, too. Yeah. My friend, it's a pleasure having you here on the podcast. We want to bring you back in about 3 to 6 months and keep us updated on your arm.
You got me, brother. I'm blessed, you, man.
All right.
You always have my blessing.
God bless you, too, and thanks for coming on
today. Thank you.
Well, as you can tell, we got a little sidetrack off base every now and then when you haven't seen a friend that you've known for more than 34 years for a long time. You got to reminisce. So it was a pleasure having Fidel on talking about that. You know, we chit-chatted off our recording studio as well a whole lot. And that's what connection is supposed to be. We're a society nowadays that we don't have friends. We have acquaintances, we work with them, and then we never speak to them again. So when you have, bona fide friends for so long like this, 34 years, it's always good to catch up. And we talked a lot of stuff off the microphone that was personal and dear to us. And we spoke about other people that have passed. So, you know, I apologize, we got a little bit off script, but nevertheless, episode 300 is in the books. As always, continue to pray for yourself, because without you, we have nothing. Continue to pray for your family, your community, and the law enforcement agencies that serve you. And most importantly, continue to pray for the United States of America. Up next, episode 301, myself and Eminem will talk about wellness and how to relieve stress and how to live a stress-free life. I'll see you downrange.
Chester, 1322.